everyone, and welcome into another episode of After Hours, a minor league baseball podcast, a show that dives into the business of minor league baseball. Thank you so much for joining me. My name is Brandon Apter. I am your host. If this is your first time listening, welcome. And if you've listened before, thank you so much for tuning back in to the show. If you're not already following the podcast on Twitter, you can at After Hours Pod. It's also on Facebook, After Hours, a minor league baseball podcast. You can search that in the bar and be able to find it there. The show is available on all major podcasting platforms, including Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Anchor.fm, and Stitcher. So if you are not already subscribed, please do. And if you are enjoying what you're hearing thus far, if you are a repeat listener, please feel free to leave a 5-star review in the Apple Podcasts section that you can do that. And for those who have submitted their positive reviews thus far, I really, really appreciate it. So in this episode, I'll be joined by Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs media relations manager, Mike Ventola. He joined the Iron Pigs over the 2018 offseason leading into the 2019 season after serving as the voice of the Reading Fightin' Phils for a little over 5 years. So we'll learn more about his broadcasting career, how he's transitioned from day-to-day broadcasting to now serving in a media relations role. And we'll also talk about one of the unique Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs promotions that they recently announced. And we'll touch on some of the Phillies prospects that Mike has gotten to see across the years of broadcasting in minor league baseball. So sit back and enjoy After Hours, a minor league baseball podcast featuring Iron Pigs media relations manager Mike Ventola.
As here comes the pitch. Swung on. This ball's head out towards left field. That ball's going. Arrivederci, Rhys Hoskins. His 37th home run of the season. He's homered in two straight nights, and this game is tied here at 3 apiece. And for Hoskins, he now has 111 runs batted in.
All right, everyone, welcome back into After Hours, a minor league baseball podcast. Right now, I am joined by Mike Ventola, the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs media relations manager. Mike, thank you so much for taking some time to come on the show.
All right, Brandon, thank you very much. Looking forward to talking with you and talking about some minor league baseball.
Definitely. We just had about a 5-minute conversation about wrestling back in the 90s and the 2000s, and we'll touch on that very, very little at the end of the show. But let's start kind of at the beginning of your career. For the majority of your career, you've been doing the broadcasting thing, media relations and everything like that. Your minor league baseball career dates back to when I started back in 2009. You started with the Augusta Green Jackets. So what for you first sparked your interest about wanting to work in minor league baseball? I know a lot of people are baseball fans when they grow up, but minor league baseball specifically, what kind of piqued your interest early on?
Well, what ended up happening was it was kind of a unique situation. I was going into my senior year, and I needed to have an internship completed before I graduated. It was a requirement by the university I attended, and near dear friends of mine, Jess Morrell, she is actually still the assistant director of campus ministry at my college, and her younger sister, Amanda, she was 2 years after me at Immaculata University.
Okay.
And what ended up happening was they're both, their family, though they're from Pittsburgh originally, but their dad many moons ago got moved down to Augusta for business. So what ended up happening was Amanda and Jess approached me, and Amanda more so because she was actually going to work for the team in the summer but elected not to go. And the woman she used to work for, Stephanie Fish, was in charge of promotions and in charge of the entertainment. So she said, you know, Mike, I think, you know, I'll reach out to Stephanie if you're interested. Yeah, I said, why not? So I ended up applying for her internship, got hired, And then I ended up spending the entire summer living with their mom and dad, who I had not yet met until I literally, Amanda and I drove from Pennsylvania to Augusta, 10 hours, and I did not meet her mom and dad until I actually pulled in the driveway that day. Might have had one phone conversation with
right.
them. But then that's how I kind of got birthed into minor league baseball. It's still my favorite summer to this day. The folks I worked with were awesome. You know, I worked with people that were from all over the country that ended up, working there full time. Stephanie is still one of the most, awesome people I've ever had a chance to work within the industry. I'm not where I am if it weren't for her. Eric Little was the team broadcaster. He really took me under his wing and allowed me to, do some games with him. And, that summer was just allowed me to kind of find out who I was too as a person,
yeah.
Had a lot of fun and, just getting a chance to really meet some people and getting really thrown into the whole professional baseball atmosphere too. So those summers were hot, it was 110 degrees. We pulled tarp and I'd have to dance on top of dugouts. I wore stupid costumes and
yeah.
did stupid races.
Those minor league baseball internships
exactly.
really know how to bring people out of their shells.
Right. So it really just kind of, and I remember my dad had flown down and then because he was going to, him and I, we drove back up to Pennsylvania together. And I told him, I said, this is the route I want to go, because I know if I want to get to the major leagues one day, I have to get through I have to go through the minor leagues. So that's how it kind of all started for me. And, without that summer in 2009, I'm not in my current position that I am today.
For sure. And those minor league baseball internships, especially the first ones, the game day internships where you're working in the office, learning a little bit of everything and then doing the games, it really gives you a nice taste of every single department. And like I said before, you have an opportunity to kind of try things that you like, that you might not like, and help figure out what track exactly that you want to take moving forward in your career, whether that's in minor league baseball or maybe even something else.
No, you're right. And, for me, I got into minor league baseball because I wanted to use it as an avenue for me to get to major league baseball.
Right.
There are a lot of outstanding people in this industry that are perfectly content with working in minor league baseball for their entire career. And that is phenomenal. It's awesome for me. I know I can handle that. I, however, have made the conscientious choice of, like I said, want to use this as an avenue to get to the major leagues. And if I don't get to the major leagues, then it is what it is. But anyways, I always try to just enjoy the moment too, mm-hmm. because you see new things, Brandon, as you know, you see new things every day. The countless people you meet, minor league baseball has so many innovative minds, not only from, a general manager standpoint, but even from the corporate sales to the ticket sales people, but marketing folk, just client fulfillment people that have to do so much going out into the community relations directors and coordinators that really get a chance to work hands-on with community initiatives. So, minor league baseball has done a phenomenal job of really becoming one of the more profitable industries in all of professional sports, with what it's been able to do. So, and for me, just having a small part in that and just being more of an entertainer and not only just talking about a baseball game on a radio
right.
or in TV in some scenarios, but also to being a media relations manager and being a former public relations director of the Reading Phillies, that it's just, a chance for me to just kind of help get those teams' messages out. So that's
for sure
a big part of what I do. So
yeah, and minor league baseball, those internships, again, they really are a good gateway into the professional world, whether you end up
yes.
going into sports or not. Really, it gives you a those long hours and it uh-huh. shows you how many cogs it takes for something to work, like you said, with the marketing people, client fulfillment, community relations, without the community relations, getting that word out and supporting local businesses and local organizations, they don't come out to the ballpark, without digital advertisements for marketing, you don't know, you know, without being able to follow the team on the road with a broadcast. You know, people might not follow the team as much. So there's so many different aspects of a front office that, that go into executing just one game, let alone 70 to 72 in AAA and then beyond for the playoffs and of course spring training too, if you're an organization that does that.
Right.
So
it's just you know, I tell young people all the time that like want to get into it, you know, I said get an internship and really engulf yourself into the atmosphere, and then once that internship's done, then obviously, you know, you'll know whether you want to keep pursuing it or not. So it's a very it's a satisfying industry, you know, because of all the things you get to meet and the people that you get to meet and all the things you get to experience. But as you know, Brandon, it's also extremely challenging because of the long hours and, you know, when
the tarp poles, like you mentioned,
the tarp poles and the things that, you know, you have to get, you know, yeah, you have to sacrifice along the way.
For sure. So for the majority of your career, you've done a lot on the media relations side, specifically play-by-play broadcasting. So what specifically inspired your passion behind play-by-play broadcasting? And do you have some favorite broadcast voices that you listened to a lot once you started?
I realized I wanted to get into play-by-play broadcasting when I was probably, I tell people, because I wasn't good enough to play baseball, my dad always tells the story that I retired at such an early age when I went from 60 feet to 90 feet. So when I announced my retirement, because I realized I just wasn't good enough. And I ended up, you know, having more joy. I was, you know, I played soccer growing up, and then I ended up playing golf in high school. You know, I just, you know, because baseball was just, it was, I was never good at playing it. So, and, but I wanted to be involved in the game. My dad was involved in the game for a number of years. My brother had a Division I scholarship, so I didn't want to be like the odd man out. So I was like, how do I get involved? And I remember when I was a little kid and, whether it was listening, you know, growing up as a Yankee fan, listening to John Sterling and Michael Kay on the radio, and then eventually when Susan Waldman joined, you know, the radio broadcast, and then Michael Kay went to TV. But I remember one day, you know, going to my dad and like, yeah, I think it's cool what they're talking on the radio. He goes, yeah, he said it's a lot of fun, and you can, it's certainly something that you could do. And I was kind of really in, engulfed in, you know, them just describing all the action. And I felt like it would be a great opportunity for me to be involved in the game. So, yeah, I grew up listening to John Sterling, Michael Kay, and then, you know, being a Yankee fan. And, you know, it was funny because the younger broadcaster me kind of really looked to them as, you know, people I modeled my style up after. And in some ways I did, you know, just because I do have – you know, an emphatic home run call that I use to this day. I do, you know, kind of say things similar, but as I've actually gotten older, I've tried to really steer myself away. And, you know, I think I've gotten better at just being Mike Ventola. Vince Scully gives to me, gave the best piece of advice that, you know, to me is, you know, should be cemented, is that, you know, for all broadcasters, they bring something else into the broadcast booth that nobody else can, and that's yourself.
Right.
So because you are, no one is like you, you're like nobody else. And I, you know, I had always admired Vince Scully, and, you know, when I went to college, fell in love with Harry Callis, you know, watching Phillies games on TV. And, you know, especially now with my relationship with the Phillies, you know, I've had the chance to call games with, you know, spring training games with Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson, and also too Kevin Franson most recently, and and even Greg Murphy. So, and, you know, getting to know Tom McCarthy and respecting the work that he's been able to do. So, you know, but at the end of the day, I just try to really be me, and I don't listen as in great detail as I did when I was younger. Cause now I'm at the point where it's like, you know, now it's, I don't know how much more, I mean, you can always learn, but it's, you have to continue to just separate yourself from other people.
Now,
so it's like, okay, how can I?
Sorry to interrupt, but I just had a quick question. Do guys like Tom McCarthy, you mentioned Harry Callis, and I feel like ever since his passing, whoever was going to fill his shoes were going to have really, really big shoes to fill. So does a guy like Tom McCarthy, who's been with the Phillies for quite some time now, ever feel that pressure of having to fill those shoes? Or is it like you said, where after a little while of filling in for that legendary voice, you just end up not trying to replace them, but really like just being yourself and offering yourself to, exactly, to the booth?
And that's the thing about it too. You know, Tom knew Harry a long time and loved him, admired him. You know, if you talk to Tom, he would tell you how much Harry had an impact on his career. You know, Harry was such a lovable and likable guy, you know, and for Tom, I think, you know, I'm sure that first year in 2009, you know, because when he died, he was in, you know, in Washington, D.C., and I only remember it so much. It was the day after my birthday. That's the reason why I remember his mm-hmm. death so much. When he died on April 13th, Tom had to fill in right away. So it was just, he got really thrown into it by fire. And, you know, I'm sure that first season was challenging because he's thinking, okay, but I think after that, he just treats his businesses as usual. So I think for a lot of announcers that have to step in, how about Joe Davis having to step in for Vin Scully? You know, Jason Benedetti, you know, having to step in for, oh, good Lord almighty, and having a, in the, for the Chicago White Sox. Or, you know, you think of Len Casper filling in, you know, after, you know, Harry and Chip Carey, you know, and Chip Carey, no, Chip Carey's in Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know, but I think about stepping in for Harry Carey or, you know, Dan McLaughlin, you know, filling in for Jack Buck, you know what I mean? Or obviously yeah. after Joe went national. So, you know, when you think of all these iconic voices and people have to replace them, at the end of the day, these guys are true pros. They're there at this level for a reason, and they just go about doing things, you know, in their own style as the way it should be. So, like, you pay, you remember, you pay homage, but
yeah.
you, at the end of the day, you can only be, you know, Tom McCarthy can only be Tom McCarthy.
Yeah.
Mike Ventola can only be Mike Ventola. You know, it was on a much smaller scale, but when I stepped in the radio booth in Reading, you know, Steve Degler was a broadcaster there for 18 years. And, you know, they had two other announcers in between me and then, but still, you know, I remember walking around the ballpark and Steve does games for our regional television network that televises the game, that games in Reading and in Lehigh Valley. And I remember walking side by side and everybody, you know, giving Steve the love and embrace. And obviously people, you know, saying hello to me, but it was just, you know, I remember my first year, it's like, man, you know, everybody knows him.
And yeah.
Maybe I can get to that level someday. But then I realized, and Steve's been one of the best mentors I've ever had. So it's like, you know, you start to realize, okay, just got to be you. You're not good.
Exactly.
If you try to be somebody else, you're going to fall flat on your face.
True. Good advice. Yeah. So a couple of your early career stops included places that you ended up working later in your career. With Reading and Lehigh Valley, you know, minor league baseball is one of those things, one of those industries. I've talked about it before on previous episodes where there are many instances where in order to move up, you have to move somewhere else. And right. I think that's true for a lot of people in the industry, but there are people that stay kind of in the same area in the same vicinity, and you had the opportunity to intern in Reading and then return to Reading, same with Lehigh Valley. So talk about getting the opportunity to return to two organizations that you spent time with earlier in your career when you were just starting off.
So I kind of have to backtrack and kind of tell you how I landed those interns.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
In 2010. In 2011. So after I completed my internship with Augusta in 2009, and then, you know, getting ready for next summer, I was having a little difficult time landing somewhere. I actually had an interview with then the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Yankees to do not even media relations or even radio. It was to be a marketing intern. And then I realized that I was kind of, it didn't feel right. You know, it was just, I'm like, man, I'm just trying to land something. But I had sent an email on a whim to Reading, and Tommy Viola, who was then the PR director.
He's said, in Charlotte, you know, now, right?
Is he still he's the VP of communications for the Charlotte Knights and a dear, good friend of mine. And, you know, I said, look, Tommy, you know, I'm looking for an opportunity. And he goes, Mike, you know, my full-time internship was fulfilled, but I would love to bring you on as a game day intern. I feel like I can utilize you in different ways up here in the press box. And he brought me on, and he was wonderful to me because he knew I, you know, was trying to work towards radio, but I know, like, he also, too, realized I needed to, you know, get more experience. So he had me come in and be a press box attendant, even if it was as simple as, you know, rolling hot dogs for the media, you know, getting hot dogs and getting, you know, the.
I remember in Reading, that was the one thing that I was allowed to eat as a game day intern in 2009 was those hot dog rollers. I don't think I ever had a ballpark hot dog for like the next 4 or 5 years after eating hot dogs pretty much every day.
Those Birch hot dogs are legendary. And then he also would put me on, you know, doing stats and, you know, just, you know, sometimes I'd have to, you know, answer the phone, answer the phone or make, you know, phone calls or whatever, you know, for, you know, report a score or things of that nature. Actually, there was a couple games the full-time intern had to miss, so he had me come in early, fill in for him those days. And, you know, and he also, too, had me, like, conduct interviews for, like, home players or visiting players just so, because he had a blog and he's just like, you know, Mike, why don't you do some interviews? We can put them on my blog. And, you know, because it was on the team website. So, you know, he would put them on social media. Had just really kind of started. Mm-hmm. So he put them out there for me. And, you know, I really get my hands dirty and it was awesome. So not only being there, but then that also led me to getting the opportunity with the Iron Pigs the next year, being the pre and post game show host for the Iron Pigs Radio Network, working with Matt Provins and John Schaefer. But I had also worked part time for the radio station that broadcast the Iron Pigs game. So Tommy used to work for Matt and John, called them up and said, look, you need to hire Mike. You know, I know you may have some other qualified candidates, but this guy is going to be, you know, you really went to bat for me. And Matt figured because it only paid $200 a month, I lived 10 minutes away from the station. And I think Matt and John were just like, you know what, let's do it. And I really, that experience having to be on the radio every day in a pre-post, that first month I was so nervous and, you know, made a lot of mistakes. But by May and then June, by the end of the season, it was really, you know, I got comfortable, yeah. Clear on the air and would even, you know, host.
You had an opportunity to really get comfortable in your own shoes.
Exactly. So, but because of 2010 and 2011, Brandon, when I was in Southern Illinois in 2012 and 2013 as, you know, a PR, you know, director of broadcasting and media relations for the independent team I worked in 12 and 13, when Reading opened up for their play-by-play job, I put in, got hired, and then once Matt Provins left this past year, because of my relationship and I believe with the Phillies and things of that nature, it led me to come back up to Lehigh Valley.
There was a promotion below you too, the high A broadcaster, Kirsten
Carbach.
Yeah. Yep. She got promoted to double A.
Yes. So, you know, and you know, I got to know Kirsten for a number of years being in Reading, and she's, you know, doing a really good job, you know, taking over for me. I've been very happy and with what she's been able to do. So it's, but you know, minor league baseball goes back to what I said earlier. It's about that, you know, creating those relationships and being able to maintain those relationships, mm-hmm. and being able to show that you care, you work hard, and, you know, good things should come. So, and that's how I kind of ended back up in Lehigh Valley.
Yeah. So in addition to the time that you've spent in the minor leagues, you also spent time with Nassau Broadcasting and Wagner College. So in relation to what you do now and what you've done in Reading, how did those experiences compare and how has it helped you in what you do today?
Well, it's, you know, so with Nassau Broadcasting, so that was part of that was a company that owned the station that broadcast the Pigs games, but also had, you know, classic rock station, also had a another rock station that was based up in the Poconos. And you know, I did a lot of promotional stuff, so it kind of allowed me to get, you know, thrown into like business side of things, dealing with clients and dealing with people. you know, from a business side of things. So, and also to learning how to become a producer. You know, I used to have to board out for NFL games that were aired or, you know, Sunday Night Baseball or whatever. So that experience just kind of allowed me to see, just kind of get more well-rounded. I used to do, used to be the women's play-by-play announcer at Wagner College. Mm-hmm. Because as much as I love baseball, you got to keep your, you know, you got to become.
Yeah, there's so many broadcasters that do play-by-play in minor league baseball, and then in the off-season they do basketball for some college.
Well, that's what I ended up doing. So that's what I ended up doing. So I ended up doing Wagner College for a few years, and then I got more ingrained in the NJIT, where I've been at NJIT now since 2011, and you know, having to do, we did games just on the internet. Now those games are being televised on the ESPN streaming services. So it's like, you know, getting more well-rounded in that aspect too. I do football now with Service Electric Television, and I do stuff with Lehigh University and Lafayette College, because you always got to stay well-rounded, because as much as I would love my end game to be baseball in the big leagues, how do I know someone doesn't take a liking to my football team one day or to my basketball team? And then that could be my avenue up. So why, you just got to constantly keep yourself well-rounded. Mm-hmm. So in order to keep your options open.
For sure. I always thought being well-rounded is so important in this industry, whether it's dipping your feet a little bit out of the industry in a different aspect with Nassau Broadcasting. It's similar to what you were doing, but different in some ways that can help you become more well-rounded. I know for me, throughout my time in minor league baseball, getting to experience a lot of different markets helped me with different challenges. You know, working for a year in Reading and then Wilmington with the Blue Rocks and Frederick, it's three teams that have a really, you know, they have a fan base that is already established and everything like that. They've been there for a while. And then you go to a team like Gwinnett, Port Charlotte, Florida, that have a little, they have more challenges with their demographic and their area. So I think getting those experiences to make you well-rounded, help you be able to deal with challenges down the line in your career.
Absolutely so. You know, and that's what I just, you know, for kids that reach out to me, they want to shadow, I tell them, you know, a lot of those things that you and I have just been talking about. And, you know, as much as you want to be strong, you have to be strong in certain avenues, but you got to just be able to have experience, do other things. And my job currently with Lehigh Valley, it's a little bit more media relations oriented than it is play-by-play. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I took the job because as much as I would still be able to keep up my play-by-play skills, I'd also be able to throw another tool or two in the toolbox,
yep,
the phrase I use. So, you know, and by doing that, you just, you know, I think people get invested. You always have to get heavily invested in plan A, but you got to make sure plan B is strong too, because plan A doesn't always work out.
It's very, very, very true. In February 2014, you returned to the Reading Fightin' Phils for a little over 5 years as their radio voice. And, you know, at that time, the Phillies had and, you know, really still have a deep system of prospects when it comes to Reading. It seems like where a lot of the prospects go, the top prospects, you know, Lehigh Valley, AAA, I feel like in a lot of markets is a place where prospects go for a little bit before the major leagues, but a lot of places it's more guys that flip back and forth between AAA and the majors. So with regard to your time to Reading, you got to cover a large amount of Phillies prospects. So were there some that you enjoyed calling, like calling their games the most? And are there some particular game finishes, whether it be walk-offs, pitching performances, that you remember most fondly?
You know, my 5 years in Reading, I got a chance to see some really good players, guys that are currently either with the Phillies or guys that are up in the big leagues with other organizations. You know, when I think of position players, you know, from just the Reading Fightin' Phils standpoint, you know, Reese Hoskins, Scott Kingery, you know, those guys really jump out. The home run chase of Reese Hoskins and Dylan Cousins back in 2016.
Yeah, actually, leading into before you and I talked, I played one of your Rhys Hoskins home run calls. So,
no, and it's just, you know, and he's such a great guy, and I saw him, I met up with him last week because he helped us out with a promotional announcement that's been, you know, really taking things by storm. From a non-baseball related standpoint with the Iron Pigs. But anyways, you know, those two, they combined, you know, to hit 78 home runs in 2016. And, you know, Dylan Cousins, you know, set the team record of most home runs hit by a Redding Fighting Phil in team history. You know, those two made national news just in regards to the world of baseball. Scott Kingery then the following year, at one point, had as many home runs as Aaron Judge did, who was leading all of baseball in home runs. You know, and a lot of the pitchers I saw come through, Ken Giles, you know, and his fast tracking through the system, Aaron Nola, and what Aaron Nola's been able to do.
Yeah.
You know, getting to see a lot of, you know, a lot of the current Phillies roster. I tell people, I said a lot of the current Phillies roster. I wrote, you know, got it. Was very lucky to ride the bus with those guys and, you know, to develop some friendships with and guys that, you know, I've had the chance to keep in touch with. You know, there are some non-Redding Fighting Phils guys that have stood out to me as well. You know, guys that are, like I said, are in, you know, other uniforms, you know, that you get lucky in that position to kind of go to so many different ballparks and see so many different players and seeing where those guys' journeys end up. And, you know, so that's why those 5 years, I get to see some pretty cool, you know, pretty high-profile prospects come through. But my first year in Reading in 2014, the team was terrible, won 66 games, and just didn't really have that good of a year. And, you know, it's funny, one of the players from that team, Hobie Milner, I actually had just sat down at an interview with him because he's with the Durham Bulls right now, and it's just so funny when I sit there and see his transformation. You know, he's been up at the big leagues with the Phillies and with the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, look at a guy like Jacob Wagisback, who didn't really have an end result here, but he's now, you know, pitching for the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, and getting to see guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who to me is going to be a phenom in baseball once, you know, he continues to keep doing what he's been doing. So, you know, announcers, they have a pretty, you know, they're put in a good position to see some really talented guys, especially in the minor leagues. So,
yeah, I know my first year in Reading, I was lucky enough to see, I think the ace of the staff back in 2009 when I was there was Kyle Drabek, who was untouchable for a while until he was traded for the late Roy Halladay in a trade. And that was also the Dominic Brown breakout year as well. But I do remember one of the outfielders that was also in that deal for Roy Halladay that ended up going to Oakland, Michael Taylor. He ended up retiring a couple of years ago. One of the nicest guys that I've ever interacted with. But yeah, that was also the year that Pedro Martinez came through in 2009 too. So you never know when you go to a minor league baseball game who you might see that in a couple of years might be on the big league stage in superstardom. So during your time in Reading, I mentioned it to you briefly. I played one of your home run calls. You mentioned it once that you had a unique home run call with an emphatic arrivederci. So tell me where that stemmed from.
Well, it's, you know, for me, and I tell people too, like home run calls. You know, most of them now, most announcers don't really have special home run calls. You know, like I said, when I, you know, my early years growing up, listening to John Sterling, who seems to have a home run call for every Yankee that hits one. I don't go down that route, but to me, where the arrivederci was, where I got the inspiration from was my former manager in Southern Illinois, Mike Pinto. He's a really good friend. And he told me a story of one of his announcers that actually had used it. And I thought about using it even at that time. I said, nah, I don't want to go down that path. I ended up using another home run call that I rather not talk about because it was so bad. but people, they cling to it. They thought it was funny and quirky. But this, you know, I think the Arrivederci has kind of, you know, been embraced even in more positive light than my previous call. But then I started using it. And, you know, not only because of, like I said, Mike gave it to me, but my last name does have a vowel on the end. You know, growing up Italian-American, I figured it was just kind of a good fit. So Arrivederci, yeah, which means goodbye in Italian. And I started using it, and fans really liked it. Where in Reading, my video, our video director, Andy Kaufman, ended up putting me in front of a green screen. And, you know, and every time a guy hit a home run, not every time, but, you know, early on, you know, whenever there was a big home run or whatever, I'd get thrown up on the video board, and he, you know, put in word bubbles or whatever, how you want to put them, me just saying Arrivederci and throwing some thumbs up and whatnot. And the fans in Reading took to it. They thought it was really cool. And, you know, I started to implement it here in Lehigh Valley a little bit. And, you know, so far so good, at least, as you know, I like to believe that, but yeah, that's kind of how it came about. And, you know, I don't, you know, I used to use it a lot, but now I've actually gotten to the point too where I don't use it as frequently as much as I used to, just because you, as you get, you know, like I said earlier, you learn what works and what doesn't work. And I realized that, well, you know, I use it if it feels right. Otherwise, I'll just use another generic, that ball's gone, or that ball's out of here, or, you know, it's over the fence for a home run, you know, phrases like that that most announcers would use.
For sure. We've talked about it a little bit already with regard to a few things to this point. But working in minor league baseball, and I'm sure it is across different sports as well, it's a grab bag in terms of what exactly is going to happen. But everybody kind of has a daily routine, especially on game day. I know for me, there would be a specific time that I would start writing the game scripts, making the intern responsibilities and the PA scripts and everything along those lines. So over your time as a broadcaster, what steps do you take to get prepared for a game?
Yeah, for me, it was always, you know, even now it's getting to the ballpark in the morning, and it's as simple as, you know, just getting my game notes done, you know, however long that would take, depending on what mood I'm in. It could take an hour, it could take 2 hours, and depending on what type of pace you're in.
And those game notes packs are something, especially when you get to the big league level. They're pages and pages.
Yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, making sure stat packs are made, ready to go for the coaches and media and scouts. Making sure rosters are up to date, and, you know, if there's any roster changes, making sure they're distributed evenly. It's getting lineups distributed to media, scouts, and, you know, front office personnel that may have to use them for any specific reason. And then, you know, in regards to actually prepping for the broadcast, you know, I try to always designate some time, be an hour, you know, half hour to an hour, you know, of me just sitting, reading over stats, reading over game notes, and just kind of seeing what I, you know, got on tap for the day, really getting to know the starting pitchers. And then obviously actually when it's game time, it's, you know, sitting down and calling the game. Then afterwards, it's, you know, writing the game story, distributing box scores, hopefully never having to deal with much official scoring disputes.
Right, yeah, those are never
those
fun.
As well. They're never fun. You know, managers tend to get grumpy.
Yeah,
and you know, official scorers sometimes they don't want to budge, even though they're wrong. You know,
yeah.
You sit there and you know.
You would never think it as a baseball fan from the outside looking in that that official scorers would have an ego.
I know, and it's just, you know, it's just kind of overseeing a lot of that too. You know, here in Lehigh Valley, I have to always attend a game day meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a 7 o'clock game at 11, or, you know. And then also, too, just, you know, making myself available for other things. You know, I have a broadcast partner, so sometimes I have to actually host, like, an in-between-inning contest on the video board, help my social media guy with some social media tasks. And, it's a lot. And I have no intern. It's just me, myself, and I. My broadcast partner was just hired to just strictly call the games on the radio. So, and then also, too, I'm also the team's travel secretary, dealing with hotels, sending rooming lists, to hotels prior to the team's arrival. So yeah, it's a lot, and it's just like, you know, not to sound like a Boy Scout, but always be prepared.
Yeah. One of the things that you alluded to when we were talking a little bit earlier was the Iron Pigs have a unique promotion that they announced just recently, and we've seen it across minor league baseball. It's becoming a trend, whether it be for an entire team just rebranding in general or teams rebranding for a few nights during the year to pay homage to specific things in their community. And Philadelphia is one of those places where the fans are so passionate about a number of things, whether it be cheesesteaks, you know, the Iron Pigs played as the Lehigh Valley Steaks at some point. And this year, on July 7th, the Iron Pigs have announced that they will play as the Lehigh Valley John during their 2019 Salute to Philadelphia celebration. And if you don't know what the word John is, it really can mean anything in the city of Philadelphia. So can you give us a little bit more about how that came to be and how that ended up being the name for this year's Salute to Philadelphia?
Well, a lot of things you alluded to that, you know, we were just having another Salute to Philadelphia game and, you know, sitting down in marketing meetings with my general manager and my VPs and, you know, some other select individuals. And we're thinking, okay, what can be the most Philadelphia-centric thing that we could possibly come up with? And, you know, the word John was thrown, and we looked it up in the Urban Dictionary. A John is a person, place, or thing, so it's a noun. And we're thinking, why not? Let's call ourselves the Lehigh Valley John, because then, you know, we can have some, we've had fun with it already, you know, like you and I right now, we're talking to each other. I'm John, you know, I'm the John, you know, you're hosting a John right now. I'm sitting down on a John.
Yeah.
You know, you
legitimately
mean
anything.
It legitimately means
talking
anything
to each other on a John.
Talking to each other on a John, and, you know, I'm wearing a John, and, you know, you just sit there and that's just kind of thing. And it blew up in such a way where a lot of people in Philadelphia, we've had some outstanding media attention. You know, our merchandise sales have been one of the best in team history. We already back ordered an unbelievable amount. You know, we've been sending everybody to redjohn.com to get their merchandise, mm-hmm. Getting tickets for the game. You know, we've had Reese Hoskins and Scott Kingery. They modeled some of the apparel for us. You know, the Phillies were humongous in allowing us to do that. The PR staff was great. So, you know, yeah, it really blew up in such a positive way. Yeah, a few naysayers. You know,
you'll always have those.
But you always have those no matter what we do. And, you know, it's been great. You know, now we're just looking forward to seeing them on Sunday, July 7th at 1:35. And, you know, hopefully as much, you know, hysteria it's created, they're hoping people come to the ballpark. And it's, you know, we get a sellout crowd that day, so people can actually see the John in person.
Yeah. And those jerseys are great. took a look at it at ironpigsbaseball.com earlier today, and they are really something. You guys do a great job when it comes to those nightly rebrands and saluting to the city of Philadelphia. we talked a lot about what you've done with Reading, what you're doing with Lehigh Valley, transitioning to more of a media relations role from a play-by-play role. But one of the unique things that you have gotten to do because of your relationship with the Phillies, you've gotten to call some big league spring training games. So what was that experience like for you?
You know, not to get sentimental or get serious on you, but...
we wouldn't want that.
No, I know, but, you know, it's so many people in this industry, especially broadcasters, you know, they go through their entire career, and they don't get to, you know, and most of us will never get to the major leagues. You know, it's just a fact that is, it's a sad reality. And, you know, for me, I still remember when I got the opportunity to, call my first big, you know, big league game during spring training. I had gone down to spring training, leading up to the 2015 season, and got a chance to meet people and, you know, kind of really be, you know, thrown into the spring training atmosphere. But then leading up into my second spring training, with the Phillies. I had reached out, you know, talking to the director of broadcasting, and I let him know when I was going to be down, and he said, you know, Mike, we may have an opening, you know, for you to join, you know, Scott and Larry or radio guys when the Phillies are in Lakeland when they play the Tigers. Would you be interested? I said, absolutely. Just tell me what you need from me. And, you know, and I remember going to Lakeland that day, and I get to call three innings. Scott, you know, kind of stepped down, and I stepped in. I called the middle three innings, and with Larry Anderson, who is beloved by Philly fans, and my dad and his really good buddy were in attendance at the ballpark. My mom and his buddy's wife were decided hanging out at my parents' vacation home in Orlando. So from Orlando to Lakeland is not that far of a trip,
right?
But it meant the world, and you know, I was nervous. You know, they brought me out at the bottom of the third, just kind of introduced me a little bit, but then it was like, all right, it's go time.
Yeah.
And, you dream of, you know, eventually doing that in a regular season game, but just getting an opportunity for a spring training game. You know, you're looking to your left, you're looking to your right, and you're sitting in between two big league broadcasters, and then I've had the opportunity to do it every year since. And
really probably gives you like that licking your chops and really wanting to work at it. Yeah.
Exactly what it does do is it motivates me and makes me hungry even more. But what it does do is it puts things in reality. And, you know, the premise of what I'm doing. So, you know, but I do know that if that as far as I get, I will have no regret because there are guys that go through their entire career and never get that opportunity. The Phillies are one of a handful of organizations that allow their minor league announcers that opportunity.
Right.
You know, the Red Sox do it. A couple others as well. The Blue Jays. You know, the Blue Jays allow their minor league announcers.
Yeah, Jesse
to come
Goldberg
on.
Strasser, right? Yep.
Yeah. So you know, and that's why to me, I don't take it lightly. Yeah. So this past year, I did Phillies Cardinals. Worked alongside Greg Murphy and Kevin Franson.
I love what Murph has done with his entire, all of his segments on the Phillies TV broadcasts.
He does a great job, and he's such a really good guy. And that's the thing too. You know, I've developed relationships now with all these announcers, where it's no longer, you know, every time I see him, you know, it's like, hi, Mike, you know, and, you know, I don't treat them any differently than I would treat anybody else. You know, I act like I belong, you know, and I, you know, not in a way of like, here I am. No, but,
right.
You know, like, but to me, while you're there, act like you deserve to be there. You know, not that you are to be pompous or arrogant, but just not be timid in a way.
You're just part of the group.
Exactly. And the Phillies got people, they've embraced me as a part of the group. And, you know, that's why I've always tried to work hard and develop a good relationship with the players. You know, I got a good relationship with the organization, not only from the announcers, but the PR staff, Chris Ware, who's the number two PR guy for the Phillies. Him and I went to college together. Kenny Ayers used to, be an intern with the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, got to know Kenny really well. Greg Castriotto, I've known him now for a few years. He was pivotal for, you know, me allowing to come down and do the stuff with Reese and Scott for our John announcement. So, and then, you know, getting to meet other people as well too within the Phillies organization, player development people, you know, obviously even some coaches that are in uniform in the Phillies that I worked with that when they were coaches, you know, in the minor league system. So, you know, and that's the whole premise of the thing. So yeah,
right.
Brandon, you know, those spring training games, really special. And, you know, I don't take them lightly, even though the games don't matter. But, you know, you're sitting there and you get to see the Philadelphia Phillies. And I get to see the St. Louis Cardinals and the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Detroit Tigers. You know, and it's just, you sit there and you're like,
that just, you know, came out of my mouth.
Exactly. You know, I watched Miguel Cabrera hit a, I get to, you know, sit there and call a Miguel Cabrera home run. Aaron Nola, who I used to call his starts in Reading, I was calling his starts in spring training, you know, and you just kind of sit there and you take it all back and you're like, man, this is, this is awesome. You know, Paul Goldschmidt, an all-star, you know, I watch him homer this, you know, in a game against the Phillies, you know, and it's, yeah. And it's just stuff like that. You know, you try not to take for granted. You know, I'm not saying all this to brag. I'm just putting things in perspective that you've got to be grateful because this could be as far as I go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's why I just want to enjoy it, you know, as much as I can.
Yeah, I know, like, I echo that sentiment as well. I know it's not necessarily on the same level. When I worked in Port Charlotte, we got to operate spring training there, so I had the opportunity to perform as the on-field MC for Major League spring training, and just getting to be on the field in between the innings, you know, in front of Major League players and be in front of like a big league crowd where it's pretty much sold out every day before minor league season. It gives you that extra energy and adrenaline, and you never know when you have those opportunities again. You mentioned the right. The Phillies have that opportunity for broadcasters to do spring training games, the Blue Jays as well. I know when I was in the Baltimore Orioles organization, they had a minor league night, and they had each of their minor league MCs perform an on-field contest throughout the inning. So it gave me an opportunity to go on the field at Camden Yards and do that. And I haven't been able to do that since, but it's a moment that you never forget, because like you said, you never know if you're going to get back to that point or if that's right. As far as you're going to go.
Correct.
So before I let you go, one of the things that we were talking about prior to hitting the record button was the state of the WWE. Talked a little bit about their Saudi Arabia show, which included some lackluster matches, and you were saying how you were still banging your head against the wall from Raw last night, which I think is a sentiment that a lot of people will echo that are watching these days. But if you're a wrestling fan, you probably know that there's a new player in town, and that's All Elite Wrestling, led by Cody Rhodes. They just had a gigantic pay-per-view not too long ago. That featured Dean Ambrose, now Jon Moxley, switching over from the WWE. So, being a big wrestling fan that you are, we both watched back in the days when it was the Monday Night Wars, where WWE and WCW were going head to head for such a long time. And even though WCW ended up being the one that went under, WWE really stepped up their game, and it really had them take a hard look at what they were doing and how they can improve. So a lot of people see the WWE product these days and wonder, can AEW compete, or is it just one of those things to help WWE look at what they're doing and improve? So what are your thoughts on the landscape that we currently have in the professional wrestling world?
You know, it's funny because, you know, right now I think the WWE, from a creative standpoint, it's okay, it's good, but it's not where it needs to be. I think just because it doesn't have WCW to compete with anymore. You know, TNA tried. TNA to me has not ever been able to live up to that expectation. Ring of Honor has had some nice moments. Ring of Honor has produced actually some really good wrestlers, but has never lived up to that moment. And for AEW, you have Cody Rhodes, Dustin Rhodes, you mentioned, Dean Ambrose, and Chris Jericho, you know, they've got some high profile names, but to me, I don't think they're going to get to the level I think they're going to challenge, but I don't think they're going to get to the level as they'd like to consistently, because I think with SmackDown going to Fox, and I think, you know, with Fox buying in, being now on a major network, and obviously Raw still staying on USA, I just don't think AEW is going to be able to match that. So, you know, I'm just hoping for WWE they continue, because I actually saw a house show recently for NXT. Those young men and women, they know how to wrestle with the best of them. And
I went to WrestleMania last year in New Orleans and went to my first NXT event, the NXT TakeOver, when they announced like the North American Championship, and they had that 8-man Royal, and it was the Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano rivalry. I mean, that is where like the intense stuff is now.
And it's great. And I think for Triple H, that's his baby. I think he just needs to continue, for him and William Regal, who is the general manager of NXT, I think those guys are so smart. I think they need to keep developing these wrestlers the way they need to keep doing. But I think what's happening when they get to creative up at the WWE level, And I want to think it got stale a little bit, you know. I question sometimes, you've had some pretty well-known wrestlers. You know, I think I look at a guy like Braun Strowman, who, you know, was at the peak of the industry at one point, and he's still there. But, you know, a guy like him may never ever get a championship belt because
it's more of a circus act now.
Exactly.
Like, you go to see him because he's so big.
Right. And then you look at guys like, you look at guys like Zack Ryder, who get their one moment once every 3 years at WrestleMania, or, you know, now he's, you know, he had more recently won the tag titles, but then obviously they lost the tag titles. And then you look to me, like, I'm so sick and tired, and I don't get me wrong, he's going to go down one of the best guys to ever wrestle, but I'm tired of Brock Lesnar. Like, to me, it's like, time to move on. You know, he's a Hall of Famer. He's going to go down as one of the best guys I ever saw. Because of what he was able to do in dominating the sport. But I just think his act has gotten stale. And, you know, to me, if he didn't have Paul Heyman, he'd really be out, because Paul Heyman, to me, is what's keeping him relevant.
Yeah.
Because I watch Brock Lesnar wrestle, and I'm just like, enough's enough, you know. Yeah. So, I always be a fan of wrestling. I'm probably not as heavily invested as I used to be, but, you know, I do watch the pay-per-views, and I actually think the women's division is really talented and really good. I actually think that's where WWE's bread and butter is, because they've done such a great job in utilizing all the talent they have. Obviously they've done a good job with Becky Lynch.
Yeah, the push that she's gotten over the past year
has been unbelievable.
Something,
you know. So, and with Charlotte Flair and with Bayley, and I think Alexa Bliss, and some of these, you know, the Iconics coming up from NXT, a lot of these gals from NXT are doing such a good job that I think WWE needs to just continue to, you know, keep doing well there. I just think creative from the male side needs to find a way to pick up its act a little bit. So I think they actually got the women's division in a good spot, and, you know, their storylines are good. They're exciting. I think from, you know, the male side, like, I think it just gets a little stale at times. So, but,
yeah. Well, yeah, I think having the AEW will let WWE, I know you mentioned Fox, and that's a big thing, so I think that'll make creative step up their game a little bit. But I think just giving the fans the opportunity to have a choice between what they like is so huge. And I think that's what made the late 90s, early 2000s with WWE and WCW so good, because you had that choice. And I think it's going to be two different brands, because WWE has become, especially like the main roster, you look at NXT and it's a little more intense, but you go to the main roster and so many of the shows are based more towards like the younger kids and younger families that are going, so they're trying to make it an enjoyable experience for them rather than it being something that we used to love during the Attitude Era. So I think it's just in a different place, but I think AEW is going to make things a little bit more interesting, and like I said, it's going to give fans an opportunity to choose what they want and enjoy a couple of different brands with names that people know, and Chris Jericho, Jon Moxley, and I assume there will probably be some other guys that jump over there as well.
I think so too. I miss, probably to me, the two best commentating teams of all time are Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura, and obviously good old JR and Jerry the King Lawler.
Yeah.
I miss having those two teams, and not that I think Michael Cole and, Corey Graves and,
I was a Tony Schiavone fan since I was watching.
I love Tony Schiavone at WCW. Tony, you know, I used to, him, Bobby the Brain, and Mike Tenay were great.
It was funny. I didn't know when I worked in Gwinnett in 2014 and 15. I didn't know until a couple of weeks before I got there that Tony was the play-by-play guy for the
G-Brains. And he's great. Gwinnett was just recently in town. I got a chance to meet with him. I didn't talk with him about wrestling because he gets tired of talking about it. So, but he's a really nice guy, and actually now a proud grandpa once again, so he's just a really down-to-earth good dude, and I really like what Renee Young has been doing, and like you said, there's talent there. I just think creative's got to find a way to utilize it a little bit better, but
for sure.
nothing beats a good old every now and then turn on WrestleMania 3 and see Hulk Hogan body slamming Andre the Giant, or you know, Macho Man Randy Savage dropping an elbow on the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase to win the
there
WWE,
are some things that you will never be able to not watch.
No, exactly. Or the Ultimate Warrior running out of the you know, running out at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So, you know, those were the good old days. Or, of course, a good Stone Cold Steve Austin Rock.
Yeah, the Shawn Michaels Razor Ramon ladder matches. You know,
I feel like we were spoiled. These kids nowadays, they don't have the.
Yeah, we'll have to have a second podcast in the off season talking about the old days of wrestling.
That's good. I feel like you and I would talk for 2 hours, though.
Well, Mike, I do appreciate your time. For those listening, make sure to give Mike a follow on Twitter at Venting Daily. And you can also follow the Iron Pigs on Twitter, social media, at Iron Pigs. And Mike, again, appreciate your time and hope to talk to you again down the line.
Thank you very much, Brandon, for having me. I enjoyed it. And whenever you want to have me back on, that'd be great.
All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you like what you have heard, please feel free to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And just to quickly echo one of the things that we talked about, if you're somebody in the industry just starting off or somebody who wants to get into the industry, looking to get into minor league baseball, really just look at some teams in your area or an area that you want to work in, see what they have in terms of internships, and really just attack it really. Once you get there and you have an opportunity to explore a lot of different departments, it'll benefit you down the line if you know a lot of different things. So just really go for it. Minor league baseball is one of those industries that allows people to really, really use their personality and enthusiasm while also getting to learn so much that can be transferable to other industries and other areas of business as well. So thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next time on another episode of After Hours.